Alan Crane Productions, in association with the Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for spring semester 2024. Today, review for the final exam. I will do one last look at the numbers as part of the review, and then I'll get into the meat of the exam. As you can see, the markets actually had a surge. They were somewhat bearish, but now they've all come up very strongly. The Fed announced that it was not changing the discount rate. There had been some concern that it was going to notch up the discount rate to kill the inflation, but it held it steady to try to kill off the expectation that we're going to have quick interest rate decreases in the near future. So the market was actually kind of expecting an increase. It didn't happen. So the yields had been going up on expectation of an increase in short-term rates. It didn't happen, so we should expect the yields to have actually fallen today. But we'll see about that in a little bit. Right now, the Dow and all of them are up more than 1%, which is, in other words, it turned from a slightly bearish day into a really good bull day. Adding to the good news is that we have crude oil that has broken way through its neckline. It's the lower end of its trading range of 82 to 88. So I'll have to see where the new trading range is, but definitely we're going to see somewhat lower gas prices, at least a little bit, in the next couple of days to a week. Now, coming over, gold is having a little bit of a surge. The gold bugs are getting excited about something. They weren't, but something has spooked them. And so up goes the price of gold. In other words, thinking that there's going to be an economic apocalypse or something. But one way or the other. Going over here to the 10-year bond, the yield has been, as you can see, there goes the yield, down a nice, healthy more than nine basis points. So we've got interest rates are on the mend, and that's good news because those increasing interest rates would have hurt the economy. So we're good now. Now, going over to the other side of the world, we've got Nikkei. It tried to come back from an early rout, a bear rout, but it never quite made it. But fortunately, it ended only about a third of a percent down from where it closed at the end of yesterday's trading. But London just can't cut a break. It's had a couple of good days, but it's just been sour over there for weeks now. And so it's back to its bearish. It wasn't a terribly bearish day, but it was definitely that early bull rally fizzled out and it ended up down. So there's that. Now I'll take a couple of stocks here just to remind you of some important points about stock prices and stock data for the final exam. Now we'll start out maybe Netflix, NFLX. And you can see that it's actually up. It was down early today, but the whole market was down, and now the rally is happening everywhere. So you've got a nice surge up 1.7%. Now, looking at the numbers, bid and ask. The bid, I could say, well, if I want to buy 100 shares, a round lot of Netflix, it's going to cost me $57,769. The ask is what you buy at. Now, as far as the bid goes, if you sold Netflix, the bid now is a rather 500, you sell 100 shares, $55,874 is what you get if you sold shares right now. So, nothing much on that. It's a risky stock. It's above one. And it's also slightly overvalued at 38. If we take 30 as sort of appropriately priced, this is Netflix is a little overvalued right now. Going over here, one more, just to put some more in. Tesla. Tesla's been having some hard times, but it's up now. It was down earlier today, but it's surged up with the market surging. All boats rise with the rising tide, as it were. So Tesla is up. And we can look at the, again, the ask. If I were to buy 100 shares of Tesla, I would pay $185.37 times 100. If I were to sell the stock, I would get the bid, $184.90 times 100 shares in a round lot. Now, beta there is just ridiculously high. That is an extremely risky stock. There's no question about it. And it is also above 30, so it's definitely overvalued where it is now. So there you are. This is the kind of information that I would expect you to be able to pre-produce on a final exam. Okay, now to the actual final exam. Let me mute this. Okay. First things first, final exam. There will be approximately 56 questions. Now I say approximately because you'll have a matching section and that counts as one question, but it's actually multiple parts to the question. So take that for what it's worth. You have two note cards, 4x6, front and back. You can have for the final. You can also have your financial analysis formulas sheet. And, of course, you can have your spreadsheets as well, your spreadsheet templates. Now, Mr. Luster has been kind enough to show you the ones that you will need to have. It is in your best, and I thank him for that. It is in your best interest to get those up and on your computer running before you start the final so you're not having to find them. These are the ones that you will need to have for the final exam. And you're free to use them as you need to. And I strongly encourage you to go back through the midterm and the quizzes. And practice problems so that you've got this down, these Excel sheets. And you have plenty of practice problems, including Quiz 8, the four of each kind that were on Quiz 8 with answers. So you'll have a lot of opportunities to try out and make sure that you can get the right answers. That's some serious points on the final exam. So, and this is going to make it a lot better for you. Now, just to go through those numerical questions. I will, let me go in the order. Stock valuation. I will ask you a question where this would be worksheet one on the stock valuations spreadsheets. Just some dividends and then a selling price. That would be the first worksheet. There are four in that template. That would be the first one. Then I will give you also a question where you'll just have a constant growth of an old company's dividends. That would be the second worksheet. What just put in the dividend next year, the growth rate, and the discount rate, and you should get the right answer. Hands down. And then I'll also do one with a horizon value. That's worksheet, the third worksheet on that template. You're going to put in a list of dividends, and then you're going to get the horizon value should spit out, and you should get an answer. I encourage you, and I'm saying this because I've seen this now enough times to advise you, make sure just download these spreadsheets again, because I ran into a number of students who had their spreadsheet had a formula that had been deleted or changed or something like that, and that was an absolute disaster. So just to be on the safe side, download them so you're going to the problems with fresh eyes on all of them. Because I was trying to figure out what in the world is wrong here, and formulas had been deleted, and in two cases, a formula had been altered. And it was obviously not intentional, but just do that. NPV and IRR, those were not on midterm, on quiz 8, but you've encountered them before. Just for the NPV, you put in the net present value, put in the initial cash outflow, put in the free cash flows, and don't forget, in the last year, you add in the salvage value. Don't forget that. Just put it in with the last year's free cash flow. And if you do it right, your NPV and your internal rate of return will come out. That's all. I will not ask you for a modified internal rate of return, so don't worry about that. Focus on the fundamentals that I'm giving you here. The bond calculations, I'll give you the information so you can find a yield, and I'll give you the information so you can find a price. You have plenty of examples of those in that answer, the problems and answers questions. Let me show you this. Make sure that you know so I don't have to worry about this. Bear with me here one moment. I'm going to go into student view and then turn this on briefly. In student view, those questions and their answers. And it's taking forever to do this. There you go. You've got all of them. You got four from the test bank, four example problems with the answers. And that should really give you a lot of practice so that when you go into that final, it's just going to be like less than a minute before you've got your answers. Future value and present value, same thing. I'm going to ask for that one. I'll just give you the problems. They'll be very similar to what you see right here. Just different numbers and different names, but the same problems. And you should be able to have the opportunity to get those numbers in and see if you get my answers out. So that's something for you, to a definite place for, you should consider that part of your study guide for the final exam. Now, there will be a few loose problems that aren't a spreadsheet, but you could certainly put them into a spreadsheet. I'll have you calculate a change in net operating working capital, just like I did on the midterm, give you the current assets and current liabilities for the current year, and then the current assets and current liabilities for the previous year. You just find the net operating working capital for each year, current assets minus current liabilities. And then you take the current year's net operating working capital minus the previous years. Straightforward. It was a high score, high correct score on the midterm. And repeat that. Yes.
Say that again. That was a change in what?
It's the change in net operating working capital. The net operating working capital this year minus the net operating working capital last year. Now, I might also give you just a simple CAPM question. Use the formula. I'll give you the risk-free rate, the beta, the expected return to the market portfolio. And I'll say, what is the expected return to the security or the portfolio? Yeah. So that's there. Okay, other, there, numbers, you could have numbers in questions. Like, I could say, okay, you found out that the net internal rate of return of a project was 8.5%. If you use 7% as the discount rate for NPV, will you accept or reject the project? Well, the internal rate of return is the interest rate where it goes from positive to negative. I said that was 8.5%, so 7% is below it, so it's still positive. You'd accept it. Alternately, I could give you a problem where I'd say a company has a hurdle rate of 10%. This project came in with an internal rate of return of 7%. Well, that would mean you'd reject it because the hurdle rate is the lowest rate at which you would accept a project. So anything below that hurdle rate, any internal rate of return below that hurdle rate, you're going to reject it. It's not exactly a math question, but it's mathy, if there's such a thing. Now, let me go through some other. Going back to bonds, there's a couple of questions I could hit. Okay, if the yield is above the coupon, what do you know about the price? Well, you know that it sells at a discount to par. Conversely, if the yield is below the price, it sells at a premium to par. Another one, I might say, okay, as the coupon and the yield to maturity get closer, what happens to the price of the bond? Well, it approaches par. Another twist on that, what happens to the price of a bond as the term approaches zero? In other words, as the bond gets closer to maturity. Well, again, the price approaches par. Okay, going through various topics, interest rates. Make sure you know the components of the risk-free rate and the components of the risk premium. What's in the risk-free rate? As an alternative, I could give you a problem. Okay, components of the risk premium are in the yield on a 20-year treasury bond. Well, the default premium isn't there, and the illiquidity premium isn't there. The only premium would be the maturity premium. Or I could give you one. Okay. You've got two identical bonds, except that one is AAA grade and the other is AA. What do you know about the default premium? Well, I would know that the default premium on the AA is bigger than the default premium on the AAA. I would certainly know that. That's why it's AA. It's because it's a risk. It has a higher risk of default. Those are the kinds of questions. Okay. Also, make sure you know the relationship between price and yield on a bond. I say it every day, literally every day, when we look at the stock screens. Cost of capital. I'm not going to give you a weighted average cost of capital question, but I can ask you questions about it. Like, for example, why is debt cheaper than equity? There are two reasons. One is that a company can deduct its interest expense on debt, so that makes it cheaper for the company. It can't do that with dividends on stock. And another reason is the debt holders have the prior claim to the cash flows. So they're in a less risky position. So they don't need as high an interest rate. If they're stockholders, they're at the whim of the company. Do they get a dividend or not? Does the stock price go up or down? So they would expect a higher return. Equity would expect a higher return than debt because it's riskier. Now, on that topic of risk, at the beginning of the semester, I gave you the simple risk-return relationship. The greater the risk, the greater the return. But as the semester went along, I finally came to the full definition. It's not just risk, it's the systematic, the non-diversifiable risk that matters. And it's not the return, it's the expected return. So the actual final definition you should find and highlight is the greater the systematic or non-diversifiable risk, the greater the expected return. Now, returning to the weighted average cost of capital, make sure you know that debt is cheaper than equity. But there are several different kinds of equity. There's preferred stock, existing common stock, which the book calls retained earnings, and there's new common stock. Their costliness is in that order. Preferred stock should have the lowest cost of the three equities. Retained earnings should have the intermediate cost. And new common stock should be the most expensive. Now, returning briefly to risk overall, there are two kinds of risk that make up total risk. Total risk is the sum of your systematic, that is non-diversifiable risk, and your non-systematic, your diversifiable risk. So total risk is sigma. The that is measured by sigma, the standard deviation. The non-diversifiable systematic risk our measure of that is beta. Now, on a related topic of the capital asset pricing model, and various formulas, I could give you a question where the answers are different formulas, and I say, which one is this? Like I could say, which one of the following is the capital asset pricing model? Or which one of the following is the market premium over risk-free? I could do something like that where you have to, you don't have to use a formula, but you have to identify what the formula is. Okay, just sort of random different things. I'll ask you a couple of questions about the Federal Reserve. Not difficult, but you'd have to know how many governors are there and all that. What are the three tools? What are the three duties of the Fed? Or what are the three tools of monetary policy? And I'll ask you one or two agency questions. Now, that agency PowerPoint has more than I did in the lecture. If it wasn't in the lecture, it wouldn't be on the exam, but I could ask you something about ethics in general, or who is the agent, who is the principal, or something, what are the three pillars of fiduciary duty? Something along those lines. Now, as far as ratios go, again, I don't have you calculate ratios, but you have to tell me, you have to know what they mean. And which is the biggest of these ratios? Or, a company increases the amount of inventory, what does that do to the inventory turnover ratio? Something in that regard. If a company's net income doesn't change, but it increases its total assets, what does that do to ROA? Those kinds of questions. Liquidity. Now, in general, make sure that you know those words and terms on the that are in that terms PDF that is in your files folder. I will not ask anything about IPOs, stock offerings, the Regulation D, the Form 10, and all that kind of stuff. I won't ask Securities Exchange Act and Securities Act. I won't ask any questions about that. So you can ignore those terms on the list. But there are a lot of terms that you need to know. Terms like liquidity. Make sure you know the correct definition, not the internet's hillbilly definitions. It was in a quiz. You know, you have to know that. There are a lot of terms. Liquidity, another thing about liquidity, what is the relationship between the liquidity of an asset and your expected return on the asset? Well, highly liquid assets, you expect very little return. I mean, if you got cash in your pocket, it's perfectly liquid, but you're not going to make any money off it while it's sitting in your pocket. Make sure, as far as ratios go, I should mention, know what ratios, what a ratio should look like, and why, what would worry you if a ratio looked like it wasn't supposed to? Returning to the, well, no, let me lay that off for a while. Terminology, I did this on a quiz and it was on the midterm. Just revisit it one more time. You, sir, borrow, come to my door and you say, I need to borrow $300 for 2 years. Now, the first thing is borrower and lender. If you are the borrower, you are the issuer of the debt instrument. You are the writer of the debt instrument. So borrower, issuer, and writer are all the same. Now, the other side of it is how long the loan lasts. A bill is less than a year. A note is from a year to 7, 10, or 15. And a bond is a long instrument, 20, 30 years. So in the case of the example I gave you, where you borrowed $200 from me for 3 years, or was it $300? No, $300 for 2 years. You are the issuer, the writer of the debt. I, as the lender, am the investor or the purchaser of your debt paper. Make sure, I'll ask one of those on the exam. So make sure that you have it. Going, I said something about net operating working capital. You need to know what, how changes in current assets and liability affect free cash flow. In other words, if a current asset increases, does that help or hurt free cash flow? Well, current assets going up decrease free cash flow. On the other hand, a current liability going up would increase free cash flow. It would help free cash flow. So make sure you know that. More broadly, if net operating working capital of a company goes up, that is a drain on free cash flow. If net operating working capital goes down, that is a help, an increase in free cash flow. Other terms you should, well, I mean, I'm just throwing these out. You should know what optimal capital structure is. That's definitely something that would be fair game. I did that on the midterm. It was not a good score for that one, so it's going to be revisited on the final in some way. Returning to the early part of the course, business organizational forms. Which type of company protects, shields the owners from personal liability? Early in the course, I talked about the difference in accounting and finance. What costs are important in finance that accountants don't even recognize? Conversely, what costs are important in accounting that finance doesn't really care about at all? Those early ideas, along with, I brought up very early the difference between the prior claim and the residual claim to the cash flows. Make sure you understand that, you know that. Very quickly here. Okay. Am I forgetting anything? Okay. That's my side of it. Of course, we will be in our offices during our office hours tomorrow. Then you can shoot me, if it's not a complicated email message, you can ask me a brief question. Now it's your turn. What do you want to know? What questions do you have for me? Yes. What I've said in class.
I mean, you said not
online. Well, that, you know what I mean. I said it early in the course, okay, that if the textbook and I disagree, I'm correct.
Okay.
But otherwise, the textbook is just excellent. Besides, the textbook is a physical thing that is online. But yeah, if I'm in disagreement with the book on something, I'm right. The only places probably where you'll find a significant difference is where the book says that a high P-E ratio stock is safer than a low P-E ratio stock. And that, in technical terms, we would say that that is bullshit. Okay? Yes, it's the other way around. But other than that, we're almost all in agreement where there is compatibility, where there is crossover. Anything else? Yeah.
Where do we find your
podcast
structure?
Podcasts. I'll show you up here. You can go. Hang on. Let me find the announcements. You should find them in your announcements, the links. Now, I should point something out here. Where are my old announcements? It doesn't show them. Well, let me do this. Now, the one RSS site where the transcripts were, those ended a couple of weeks ago because RSS started getting confused by all that I was sending up there. But earlier lectures are on RSS. But your best place where they originate is isuprof.com, and you can see them all right there. Every lecture, you can listen to them while you're eating, while you're sleeping, while you're using the toilet. Indeed, you can even use those when you're visiting your parents and you've tired of listening to them. You can also find them at this web address if you want to write it down. Matter of fact, let me cut those. That's Apple iTunes. Let me try that again. Something went wrong there. Let's try that one more time. On Apple iTunes, and I'll put it up as its own link. There, by the way, are your questions and answers for quiz 8. But let me do something. Why is this weird looking? Oh, I see. Okay. File, blank, increase the font. you want to write that down, you can get them. You can get the podcast there on Apple iTunes. It's ID 3285-466-89. Or you can just go to podcast.itunes.com and just type in Illinois State Collegiate Compendium. It'll take you right to them. In that same regard, you can also and again, you would want to listen to the podcast of FIL 240-002. And you'll get all the podcasts on and on down the list for everything that I've done. Good Lord, this has been a long semester. Okay. Anyway, other questions? Yeah.
Can you do a Horizon Value model example
that
shows how
it might not work? Hang on here. I see something. Give me a second here. As a matter of fact, what I'll do, let me do it this way. First of all, I'm going to need files. Okay. I'm wondering if I can copy that up. Give me a second here. From the quizzes, okay. First of all, let's do one from those examples. Question. There it is. Download. All these stupid things. Okay. Which one did you suggest, Mr.?
Okay.
Let me go down here, loan payments, dividend growth model, terminal price. Is this it?
No, that's still dividend. I think these are the, those are the.
Okay. Let's take the Pan Global Transport. Now let's pull up the spreadsheet that I want. And we'll run through this. You do it with me here. So let me get the spreadsheets. Stock valuation. Where am I? What am I missing here? Oh, spreadsheets. Got it. I got to go to the spreadsheets to find it. Okay, now let's take the stock valuation. And we'll download it. And we're ready to go. Now what I'll need, this is the dividend model. This is the just straight growth from the beginning. This is the horizon value model. Now I'll have to put in the right numbers for this. And if I look at this problem, the dividends are $1.90, $2.05, $2.10, $2.40, and $2.60. Now let's see if I remember those. $1.90. What was the next one?
You can split the screen.
Oh, yeah, I guess I could. I hate doing that.
Or try to hold above this, just like hold the cursor.
Right here? Go ahead. Because I never do this. Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, fine. I was going to try to shape them so that what this spreadsheet was bigger. This will work though. $1.90. We got $2.05. Oh, $1.90. 2.05. $2.40. Is that right?
It's a little off for that.
190, yeah. There we go. That would have really surprised me. 205, and then what was the next one?
240.
Oh, maybe you missed. I think I did. It's, yeah, it's cutting off some of the screen.
No.
210. Oh, I see. Oh, okay. I'm just not used to this split screen like this. I have all these giant monitors. Okay, so 210. God, my hands. Someone please come up here and hold my hands. 210. What's the next one? 240. Is that right? Am I okay? 260. No, 265. Okay, now notice what's going to happen. The next year's dividend automatically calculates. So does the horizon value. So does the price. Once you get in those first five dividends, it's done. That's the important part. The rest of it, calculate, see, because the horizon value needs a dividend at year six, it calculates the dividend at year six, and then it uses that to calculate the horizon value. And then once you have the horizon value, it takes the present value of years one through five and includes in year five the horizon value and gives you your answer. $2.65. After all, I didn't change it, did I? And I got to change. I'm sorry, I forgot the discount rate and the growth rate. I do apologize for that. The discount rate was 9.5, and the growth rate, I forgot to do that, 3.15. Oops, 3.15. Now, you'll get slightly different answers, and I give you a pretty good range in which you can get it. 190, 210. Oops, I have to put in a 190, 205, 210, 240, 265, 273 would be the dividend growth rate, 9.5%. So my answer is maybe different from what you see there. I give you enough room so that you can get off by about $2.50 and you'll still get the right answer on the final. Okay? So you'll have plenty of room. This Excel is giving me a slightly, somewhat different answer from the one upstairs. But the margin of error will be $2 on the final for any answer. Doing another one. Let me do another one, see where I hit. Okay, 75 cents. 85 cents. One more. No, a couple more. 90 cents. I did. I am really bad today. I'm blind as a bat trying to do this. 85 cents. I gotta have you read these to me. 90 cents is the next one. What's the next one?
After. Goes 90, yeah, for year four, and then 95 cents.
Okay, what's the growth rate and the discount rate? That one's right on, dead on. You got it now? You got it? Can you follow it? Just put in the numbers and get the answer. You're on yours or what? Really? Did you download the sheet again? Right?
I just downloaded it again. It worked. Okay. She just downloaded it again. It's not working.
That's weird. Huh. Well, let's resolve that. Well, do you have any other questions? If you don't, yeah. Bond prices. bond prices. Let me, first of all, all the way up. Thank you. Second one?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me download the sheet. All right, my way. Okay. Actually, I can get rid of that now. Bond prices. I'm going to try that. See if I can do it. Bond prices. Bond price, 5.8% on the coupon. Yield to maturity is 5.625. This bond, 2032, would be 8 years. Second one, okay. If it is, I'll send out, if there's a mistake, I'll send out a correction. The second one, okay, coupon is 4.25%. Thank you. The yield to maturity is 4.875. The term of the bond is 5 years. Yeah, that is different on this spreadsheet. I'll have to send out a correction on that one. That one's definitely off. It's off farther than the margin of error. It shouldn't matter at all. No, that's wrong. Thank you for that. I will send out a correction. Yeah. Can you make a note of that?
What was it?
It was question two in the questions and answers from quiz eight. Let me run through real quick here on the next one. The actual answer is 972.85. So let me run the next one. 2040 would be 16 years. The coupon, 6.5. Yield to maturity. Yeah, that one's right. Yeah. Hang on. Give me a second here. Let me check. This is section two. It's a six. It is the six. Hang on here. Let me look. You got it. What does it say? 1210 to 210. Yep, six. Let me get this last one cleaned up here. Question four. 2035 would be 11 years. The coupon is 5.75. And
how'd the presentations go, Professor?
Huh? Good.
Yep, that one's right, too. It was just that one was fouled up. Other than that,